Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Okay, listen to this. This has been going on last week and the week before that and for a really long time. This is how they do business in Great Britain. You think our government's kind of wackadoodle sometimes? Here's just an average day on the farm.
Mr. Stewart, if you don't like it, you're perfectly entitled to your view. I couldn't give a flying flamingo what your view is.
That's the Speaker of their House, John Bercow. CNN added the music. Then they storm off. They're all walking out. I'm always reading the faces of the other politicians. Are they doing a... or are they smiling? Or are they angry? Here's just another series of lines from that guy and the reaction from his colleagues in England.
What do I say to the Chancellor of the Duchy? That when he turns up at our children's school as a parent, he's a very well-behaved fellow. He wouldn't dare behave like that in front of Colin Hall, and neither would I. Don't gesticulate. Don't rant. Spare us the theatrics. Behave yourself. Be a good boy, young man. Be a good boy.
In our studio is Peter Brisseret. He is an assistant professor of public policy at the University of Chicago. To tell us a little bit about the British House of Commons, that's the body you were listening to. Professor, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Where are you from?
I was born in Louisiana, but my parents are English, and that's where I grew up.
You studied at Oxford.
I did.
You're now teaching public policy at the University of Chicago.
That's correct.
Well, then you're uniquely positioned to experience two of the most supranationalist governments in the world right now, aren't you?
There's no safe haven. My wife is Swedish, and that's looking like the only safety valve at the moment.
Well, maybe people agree with the positions these people are taking. First of all, just give us a comment on what we just heard.
Yes, so that, I believe, took place possibly last Monday. I remember hearing the same thing. It was during the course of a debate in the House of Commons over whether Parliament should take control of its legislative agenda away from the government. And the idea was that Parliament or some members of the House of Commons, our lower house, wanted to force the government to request an extension to the UK's departure from the European Union, which is supposed to take place on the 31st of October. The government does not want that. It wants the flexibility to walk away, potentially with no agreement. And it was a very feisty debate, as your viewers probably heard.
So we'll talk about that underlying issue in just a minute. But I'm as interested in the sort of comportment of the members of the body itself. Is that how they always do things over there?
It's a rowdy institution. I mean, the government and the main opposition party are positioned facing each other in this naturally kind of adversarial posture.
This is the House of Commons.
That's correct.
It is your House of Representatives relative to the way we run things.
That's exactly right.
You have a Senate as well. Well, that's the House of Lords.
We have an upper chamber, an unelected upper chamber, which does not represent a particular geography. They're unelected and in many cases appointed by a government.
So they don't have the same votes that our Senate does or that your House of Commons does. Then.
That's correct. Over time, over a long period of time, their powers have eroded largely to delaying.
So the sausage gets made in the House of Commons then. That's where the actual votes take place. And how many members are there?
Give or take 630. It depends from year to year, depending on districts.
You're a smaller country than ours considerably, but you have 200 more elected representatives in your house?
There are so many different points of view and people who have things to say.
And they face each other? Is that what happens?
Yes, the house is organized kind of two sides facing each other. So the government will be directly opposite the main opposition party, which at the moment is the Labour Party, and debates between the leaders of the parties will be them facing each other across a table, essentially.
And here, I don't know who's stiffer. I had the impression that maybe the Brits were, but in the United States, I think if we saw that sort of behavior, and we sometimes do in the House, but if that was happening in our Senate or House of Representatives, we would really look askance at that. do the British people feel about that sort of dialogue?
I certainly think that it's not impressive for an ordinary member of the public to see what's going on in there. And there are plenty of members of the House of Commons who would acknowledge that, you know, that kind of raucous behavior belongs in some kind of debating club. It's not very seemly that elected members deciding the fate of the country should be jeering at each other and hurling insults.
But they've done that prior to Brexit, whatever the other issues have been. That's kind of the way they do it, right?
Of course, it's a performance.
It is a performance. And so you might applaud something that's good. But if I'm sitting in that body and I don't like what the other side is saying, it would be within the keeping of the running of that house for me to go, hey, boo, no. That would be... People would turn their heads in the Congress of the United States. There, that's just the way people express themselves.
That's right. But let me tell you, there are certain lines that you cannot cross. For example, you are not allowed to accuse someone of lying. An accusation by one member of the House against the other of lying has to be withdrawn. The Speaker will call on the member who made the accusation to withdraw. And if not, they can be told to leave the House. And there are sanctions in place. So shouting, for example, you lie, would be an actionable offense in the House of Commons.
That was shouted at our president.
Indeed,
famously.
Exactly.
So this John Bercow guy, the guy that we were listening to, he's the Speaker of the House of Commons, or was, right?
He will be until October 31st. He chose his date of departure strategically.
Why do you say that?
October 31st is the date on which the UK is supposed to leave the European Union. And he wants, I think, to ensure that he's still, if you can call it that, steering the ship right up until the end date.
Well, we don't get to pick when our politicians come and go. It's set in stone when the election is and when the inauguration is.
That's right. But the UK has a parliamentary democracy where the government, the members of the government are themselves elected members of parliament, and the government is drawn from the House of Commons. And the timing of an election is dictated partly by a limit on the number of years that a government can be in place, which is 5. But historically, the government can choose to call an election whenever it wanted, and dissolve Parliament.
Not beyond the 5-year.
Not beyond the 5 years.
But if you felt it was politically advantageous to do it now, while we've got a good situation, you can run another 5 years on the meter, right?
That's the thinking. And there are plenty of examples of prime ministers who had foreign policy adventures that went well and decided that that was a fruitful time to call
good time election. To do another 5.
Precisely.
Okay, I'm not a big fan of that.
Well, it depends. I mean, another feature of it which you might find more attractive is that just as the government has the option to call an election, if a majority of members of parliament, again, yeah. This is historic because there's a current set of caveats which I'll go into only if you invite me to why that's not feasible. But in general, if the majority of members of the House of Commons don't have confidence in the government, they can bring the government down and force an election.
So where today Democrats control the House of Representatives in the United States, they're not going to pull off an impeachment. That would require the Senate vote. But if they could say, let's just have another election, would it be an election for themselves or could it be for the president? Could it be for the prime minister?
It would be an election for the entire House of Commons, which means that when you call it, you want to be pretty sure about your prospects. So it's a double-edged sword. Both the prime minister and the executive have the ability to call it, but also the House of Commons collectively, by virtue of a majority, also have the ability.
But would their calling it, would that be an election for the prime minister as
well?
That
would be an election for every member of the House of
Including
Commons.
Including the prime minister.
Precisely, because the outcome of the election will determine which party or parties will then hold the position.
Well, that would be an interesting end around in America for Democrats who feel like they want to get rid of the president, but really have no mechanism to. Even if they drop articles, the Senate won't do it. But if they felt there was a sort of popular support for that, they could do that if it were England, huh?
That's true, but they themselves would find themselves in the crossfire. So, I mean, if they thought that they were confident enough of their prospects, then perhaps they would wish to do it. But these things can backfire. For example, Theresa May had that experience when she called a snap election a couple of years ago and lost her own majority.
Hmm. When I look at the faces of the members of the House of Commons, the 600 of them, we don't see them all. We only see, I would say, 100 or so. The body must be vast.
It's a fairly crowded room. If the place is full, there's only standing room downstairs, and then there are viewing galleries on top.
Standing room for the members themselves?
Even some members have to stand.
Bummer. And because they all got fancy chairs in the United States. But I'm looking at their faces, and I don't know if the, say, opposition party that's doing the grumbling, and then they all stormed out. The one group of people got up and said, "That's it, we're out of here, Bob," and they walked out. And the other guys were just standing there, and gals, and I was reading their faces, like, this is theater and it's humorous and we know this is a show, or they're really ticked off. It's hard to tell how they genuinely feel.
Well, it is hard to tell because, on the one hand, I think, as you may know, the government has prorogued Parliament, meaning that they've said, right, you guys, we're not going to sit for a few weeks and there can be no meeting of Parliament. And so, that process means that if there were any chance of Parliament meeting now to debate Brexit, that chance has been taken away by the government. I mean, it's a little more complicated than that, but if you're a member of the opposition party, you're screaming that this is a threat to democracy and the government is being very heavy-handed. And I saw some of them holding up placards, saying that democracy had been betrayed.
But the other side said that, in fact, they take a break over that period of time anyway, right?
That's right. Again, it's a slightly tricky one because the timetable around the fall is a little strange. MPs come back for normally a week at the beginning of September, and then they're supposed to go away anyway for the rest of the month to do their party conferences and figure out what their policies and programs will be. Now, on the one hand, the government has merely extended the number of days that period would have lasted by 5. But there was another feature. Some people on the opposition side are saying, well, we would have voted to suspend the recess for party conferences because it would be our duty to stay in Westminster and debate this. Of course, members of the government say, yeah, right. And then another feature was that if in that week at the beginning of the month, you were trying to get a bill through to stop the government doing something that it wanted to do, if you didn't get it done by the time Parliament were prorogued, all that progress would be lost and you'd have to start again.
In our studio is Peter Buisseret. He is an assistant professor of public policy at the University of Chicago. He's British-born. He's a U.S. and British citizen. He teaches policy at the University of Chicago. He's an Oxford man and a Princeton man, too, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so then let's pause. Come back and tell me the Brexit debate. I mean, so that's just who the players are. Come back and just tell me a little bit about the Brexit debate and the timeline and where Boris is and where John is and where you are on this in a minute. In our studio, Peter Buisseret is a professor of public policy at the University of Chicago. We've been talking about the British House of Commons because of the craziness you see in the news or videos of how they're all hum, 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 and it sounds sometimes like a Monty Python skit. Meets the Muppets, meets the U.S. Congress. That's what the House of Congress or the House of Commons over there looks and sounds like. Peter's been filling us in on how that body works. But a lot of the grumbling now, of course, Peter, is about Brexit. I just have a couple minutes, so we won't get into all of the details. But October 31st is the deadline. Boris Johnson is there because he said we will get a deal done come hell or high water, right?
He said we will leave, do or die. That may involve a deal or it might not.
Right. But either way, we will not be part of the European Union November 1st.
That is his intention.
And in fact, you guys could leave the EU tomorrow if you wanted, right? I mean, isn't it maybe you won't have a deal or any favorable deals with your partners in Europe, but it's up to the UK to do whatever it wants, isn't it?
Well, there is a withdrawal process that was set out in the Lisbon Treaty. So there is kind of a managed process for negotiation. Of course, that process, if it had been followed, we would have left at the end of March. So the only reason that we're still in the European Union is because the House of Commons couldn't come to an agreement on the form of the Prime Minister's deal that she, Theresa May, Boris Johnson's predecessor, had tried to negotiate. So she negotiated this deal in Europe. She came back to the House of Commons, said, what do you think? And, you heard what they had to say about it.
Ever since, we've been in a stalemate. What's the biggest sticking point?
The biggest sticking point is the Northern Irish border. So, imagine the exercise where you take a map of the UK. So, England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland. And I tell you, you have to somehow draw a border between the UK and the rest of Europe, but you're not allowed to put any kind of border between Northern Ireland and the Republic, and you can't put a border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. And at some point, you're going to say, this is just an impossible exercise. Why are you asking me to do this?
Logistically, strategically, it's just impossible to do.
It's impossible because if you believe that you do not want a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic, this goes back at least to the Good Friday Agreement. So the desire not to have any friction between the between Northern Ireland and the Republic for reasons that I'm sure many of you viewers will appreciate and I'm happy to get into. On the other hand, there is a Northern Irish political party which has been supporting the minority Conservative government, which views any change in the way that Northern Ireland is treated vis-a-vis the rest of the UK as unacceptable because it represents kind of a pulling away of Northern Ireland from the rest of the UK. So you have to chop somewhere if you're going to chop, but there's nowhere to chop that doesn't leave people very, very upset.
So what's going to happen?
Well, that's the problem. So, you know, any one outcome is very unlikely, but something has to happen. This is
any
the problem.
Any one outcome is very outcome is likely.
Indeed.
Something is going to happen.
So I appreciate the irony of saying that, and that's the problem is anything is possible, but everything is very unlikely. So right now we don't know. The government, Boris Johnson is currently, he would like us to believe, negotiating in Europe. He failed to show up for a press conference this morning in his host country, but supposedly he's hard at work behind the scenes. Now, Parliament passed a law that says to the Prime Minister, if you don't secure a new agreement, or if Parliament fails to pass any agreement that you bring back, you have to go and ask for an extension. Now, Europe could say, we've had enough of your extensions, go out. But that's kind of where we sit right now. So people are asking, you know, will the Prime Minister find a way to get around this obligation or will he have to do it and then we'll have a general election?
Well, I'm not a big unilateral guy. I like to see the United States, for instance. I would assume if I were British, I'd like to see the Brits have as many relationships with other countries as possible. Is it possible that, in fact, for instance, right now, are you all operating as if none of this ever happened? You still have the same trade relationships and travel opportunities between the two countries as you did before, right?
That's right. So a European can come to the UK. You remember someone from the UK.
So if this were extended in perpetuity, I mean, just never get it done. Just kick the can down the road forever. Americans will show you how to do it if you need a blueprint on that, because that's how we handle some of our most intractable problems.
Well, the nature of leaving with no deal on the 31st is that all of the arrangements that support that kind of free movement will be yanked out from underneath us. And similarly for members of the UK, people, you know, British citizens who are living in Europe, they're going to face similar difficulties, access to healthcare. So that will be taken from us.
Yeah. All right. Well, today is September 16th. October 31st is right there. So, Peter, will you sort of follow this with us and join us again?
Gladly.
Peter Buisseret is an assistant professor of public policy at the University of Chicago, talking to us about the House of Commons and Brexit. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.